Doctors Without Borders are just starting a initiative, an advocacy initiative, where they are giving a lot of digital stories and building advocacy, not only in the United States, but nationwide. And you can get access to that under www.starvedforattention.org. And there's some really interesting digital stories there. And one of them is narrated by Dr. Debbie Frank, who is with the Boston Medical Center at with Children's Health Watch. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. I have been working with Children's Health Watch, as Linda said, for the last 3 years at Boston University. And I have to admit that with my previous research work, primarily with HIV in international populations, I naively did not know that food insecurity existed in the United States. We always heard about obesity, and that was the problem. So I have had my eyes opened, and this has been a great group to work with. So I'd like to share with you the methods that we use to develop this quick two-item screening tool. And one of the criteria for this two-item screening tool is that we wanted it to have very good predictive validity. So we wanted to take something that from that 18-item USDA scale and make it quick and useful for clinicians. And I just wanted to acknowledge my authors, my co-authors. A lot of work was done with the University of Maryland School of Medicine and also with the Children's Health Watch Research Group. And John Cook is part of the group and has served as a great mentor of mine. And I will describe the Children's Health Watch Research Group in more detail. And I have no personal financial relationships to disclose. And I just wanted to give you some more background about Children's Health Watch. It was started in 1998 by Dr. Deborah Frank and her colleagues. And the original purpose was to look at the effects of the 1996 Welfare Reform Act and looking at the impacts on children's health. It became apparent that there was a strong and ongoing need for continued research. Both nonpartisan original research in the area of child health and nutrition, and also a unique niche serving as both credible, timely scientific research and informed nonpartisan policy research. Children's Health Watch consists of five urban medical centers across the United States. They're based in Boston, Massachusetts, at the Boston Medical Center, Philadelphia, Minneapolis, Little Rock, Arkansas, and in, who did I forget? I said Philadelphia. I think I got them all, in Baltimore. And I think we all covered this pretty well, the definition of food insecurity, so I won't belabor this. And these are just some statistics. This pie chart shows the prevalence of food insecurity in the United States in 2008. And as Jeff, I think, said, there was a prevalence of almost 15% of food insecurity among households in the United States. Households with low food insecurity was nearly 9%, and households with very low food insecurity was nearly 6%. And Wendy described the definitions of that, but again, very low food insecurity is at times during the year, eating patterns of one or more household members were disrupted and food intake reduced because household lack of money for food or other resources for food. On this bar chart, I just am showing the prevalence of food insecurity by different population characteristics. So as we saw in the United States in 2008, nearly 15% of families reported food insecurity. Households with children had a prevalence of 21%. In our Children's Health Watch data set, there was a prevalence of 23%. Households in the United States headed by single women, there was a prevalence of 37%. And families below the federal poverty level, there was a prevalence of food insecurity of 42%. So why is food insecurity a public health problem for young children? Food insecurity is associated, among other things, with increased lifetime hospitalizations among young children. It's been associated with developmental risk as measured by the Parental Evaluation Developmental Survey. It's been associated with child behavior problems and also with caregiver depressive symptoms. The objective of our analysis, again, was to develop a brief screen to identify families at risk for food insecurity. And the criteria for this screen was that it must have excellent predictive validity. And I can get into what that means a little bit more. The methods of the study is we sampled over 30,000 families of children, caregivers of children 0 to 3 years of age, from 7 urban medical centers, and they all completed an array of questions, but one of the questions was the 18-item USDA food security scale. As part of the ongoing Children's Health Watch surveillance study, I say 7 urban medical centers, where before I said there were 5. Los Angeles and Washington, D.C.'s data is also in here, but they're no longer part of the Children's Health Watch ongoing surveillance study. This was an IRB-approved study in all locations. We interviewed, again, primary caregivers in all 7 locations. Caregivers spoke either English, Spanish, or Somali. There's a big Somali population in Minneapolis. The children that were critically ill were not approached for this survey. And data is from June of 1998 all the way to January of 2009. So this is just a sample. Of course, there's 18 questions to the food security scale. This is a sample of 5 questions. And somebody endorses 3 or more questions on the 18-item scale, they are defined as food insecure. 8 of the questions are targeted towards child food security. And 2 or more endorsements is defined as child food insecurity. Approximately 18 to 19% of our Children's Health Watch data set are child food insecure as well. So going back to our screening methods, we wanted to look at the most prevalent items that were endorsed by our food insecure families. So when they were asked the first 2 questions, we worried whether our food would run out before we got money to buy more. That was endorsed by 93% of our food insecure families. The second question, the food we bought just didn't last and we didn't have money to get more, that was endorsed by 82% of our food insecure families. And here, going back to a little epidemiology, and I hope I don't glaze you over. So if you remember, looking at sensitivity and specificity, if you look at the true food security on that top line, that would be the USDA 18-item scale, which would be called the gold standard. And on the left is our screen, where someone would say yes to question 1 or 2, or both question 1 and 2. It's very important when doing sensitivity and specificity to have a high true positive rate and a high true negative rate. And you really want to minimize those false positives and those false negatives. And I like to, for me, I like to bring it back to like medical sciences. So if we were looking at, say, a mammogram to screen for breast cancer, and our gold standard was a biopsy. We would want to have, let's see if I can get the mouse, we would want to have this false positive rate pretty low. Oops, didn't mean to get rid of that. We would want to have this pretty low. If women were screened positive with their mammogram and they really didn't have breast cancer, you could be causing a lot of anxiety in that woman before she got further testing. You would also want this false negative rate to be very low. If a woman truly did have breast cancer and she screened negative, that would just be a risk we wouldn't want to take. So in order to calculate sensitivity and specificity, you look at your true positive rate divided by your true positive rate over your false negative rate. And in our sample, it was 97%. So if a family is truly food insecure, the screen is likely to capture these families. And that's a very high sensitivity. The specificity is defined as true negatives divided by the true negative and false positive. And that was 83%, which is also very high. The screen may misclassify 17% of food secure families as actually being food insecure. But that's a minimal risk. And with these screening tools, you always want to weigh the risk and benefit ratio. I'm going to blind you with science here. So I thought this was just kind of a fun, geeky thing. This is just a model, and it's a visual depiction of the accuracy of our analysis. It's called a ROC model. These ROC models were historically first used in World War II with radar operators. I guess they would look at little screens and look at blips on the screens and see how accurate they were with the little blips. But if we look at the vertical axis, that's the true positive rate. And if we look at the horizontal axis, that's the false positive rate. So if we had something up in the, I was hoping to be closer to the screen, I could use my mouse. If we had something right up here, that means we would have 100% true positives. I lost my mousey. There it is. Okay. And 0% false positive rates. That would be perfect. And 100% of the area under the curve would be under the curve. It would be 100% of the area. So accuracy is measured as anything over 80% of the area under the curve is considered excellent. 90% to 100% is outstanding. That diagonal curve here is just like flipping a coin. They say it's worthless. That's kind of a harsh term, but it's worthless. It's like flipping a coin of determining whether you have your event or non-event, or whether you're going to determine food insecurity with this screen. And so we just reproduced this ROC model with our own data. And our screen is the blue line. So that's saying yes to question one and or question two. And the area under the curve was pretty much 0.90 or 90%. So that's outstanding. And in summary, food insecurity is a serious public health concern for families with young children. And as Debbie Frank would say, children between the ages of 0 and 3, this is when their brains, the architecture of their brains are developing, and they need nutrition, and this is such a critical period. A quick two-item screen can be readily used in the clinic setting for families that may otherwise go undetected. And if a family screens positive, interventions are available such as WIC, SNAP, and other public assistance programs. I also wanted to mention that physicians and other health care providers, as well as community health workers, could not only refer people to WIC and SNAP, but also help find people that might be able to help them apply for these programs, because that could be one of the barriers, is actually getting access and applying to the programs. The screen is actually being used in several places. Right here in Colorado, it's not being used yet, but it will be used by a group here called the Rocky Mountain Youth Clinic. Medical assistants will be screening families at their GROW clinic before they see a physician. And then the physician will either give them the full 18-item scale or refer them to resources as needed. The City Health Commissioner in Baltimore has advocated for its widespread use and developed the hungryinbaltimore.org site. This is a website that identifies resources for food insecure families. Among others, I've got a list, I won't go through them all, but the Minnesota Department of Health Family Home Visiting uses the food security screen since January 2009. HUD Homeless Census is using this food security screen in the 2011 census. The Growth and Nutrition Clinic at the University of Maryland School of Medicine is also using the screen, and there's some others on this list too. So that's very gratifying to see that it's, you know, just been developed and it's being put into use already. And thank you, and I just wanted to give thanks to our philanthropic supporters who help us with all this data analysis and collection. Thank you. And I will take any questions. Yes?
I don't know if I missed it, but what were the two questions?
Oh, I'm sorry, the first two questions were, they were the first two questions of the screen, and I will read them to you right here. We worried about whether our food would run out before we got money to buy more, and that was endorsed by 93% of our food insecure families. And the second question was, the food we bought just didn't last, and we didn't have money to get more, and that was endorsed by 82% of our food insecure families. Exactly. Yep. Yes.
And the 18
questions screen,
is there a question about whether people are SNAP recipients or whether they get any other services?
No, that is not asked in the 18-item screen.
It's not included in the scale, but when the Census Bureau administered the scale, it's included in the monitoring scale, but it's not included in the
Yes. So the question is, describe the rest of the 18-item scale of food security. I think, you know, one of the reasons for doing such strict sensitivity and specificity analysis is that we found that we weren't going to lose a whole lot by not including the rest of the scale. And one of the things that we recommend to clinicians or community health workers is that one of the things they could do is implement the rest of the 16 questions. Once they do the quick screen and say, oh, you are at risk, they could implement the rest of the screening scale. Does that answer you? I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
I guess I'm just wondering to what end would we want the additional 16 if you, the argument is that these two items cost more than the rest of the scale,
Yeah, so the question is, when would you choose to just use these two items, and when would you choose to use the full scale? And I'm John raised his hand, and since he helped to develop the scale, I'm going to let him add to that?
The first thing you would lose is the ability to categorize a family as food insecure or food secure. With the two items, you're screening them as to a likelihood of food insecurity, but you couldn't categorize them. And you wouldn't know the severity of their condition. It's like a depressive symptom scale, like a temper scale. You can screen a patient for depressive symptoms with that scale, but then even if they screen positive, you can't say they're clinically depressed or they're suffering from clinical depression. You have to go through additional examination. And similarly with the food security scale, you can find out very quickly if the household is having problems with food, but you can't tell the level of severity, and you can't actually categorize them and say that their food is secure unless you administer either the 18 item scale or their level of abbreviated versions of it.
Well, if we aren't changing, because I noticed that the kind of theme is that our food insecurity definition changes from panelist to panelist. And I don't know that we're not moving away from the intent of the scale. Certainly for a Radimal Cornell scale was to get at the experience and how it felt for an individual mother. And if it gets down to this level, I don't know what we gain from the past to self-recording.
Go ahead.
I don't think the definition has changed. I think that one of the things that Dr. Cook mentioned early on when I was talking about the socially acceptable ways is that the scales were not intended to measure that. And so if you're thinking about missing that part of getting food in a socially acceptable way, then that's not going to be captured necessarily within those scales. But I think that the definitions that we've used have been consistent. Some people have just abbreviated.
I would just add to it, I think that the full screener that we use in the CPS that USP uses, that we have internalized and new data is coming up with, and, you know, it's nice to see at a national level, quantitatively, how many families fall into these different categories. But more from a programmatic standpoint for clinicians or practitioners in the field who are dealing with patients or other clients, if there's a way to say, we know people need help, what is a quick and easy screen that we can give to then maybe set them up with some other resources? And while the 18-item screener really doesn't take that long, if you have a lot of other things that you're trying to cover with the patient, maybe a quick way to say, we're not trying to measure this so that we can give statistics for our population, but rather ways to give them help. I think it's
useful. And that was the intent. That was the exact intent of, you know, being able to give clinicians or other outreach workers a quick scale. And the 18 item doesn't take that long, but it's also a complicated algorithm to get the actual scoring procedure done. So that's another little drawback to the 18 item scale. I believe, and John might be able to help me here, but I believe the single question is looking primarily at hunger And we wanted something that didn't just focus on the severity of hunger, but we wanted people at risk. Is that accurate from your perspective, John?
I think Miller can also jump in here, but
yeah.
We've done some modeling, and we have seen that even marginal food insecurity is associated with adverse health outcomes in the children that we look at. So we think it's worth it.
Yeah, I was wondering, because I had this conversation with Mark Moore last year, I think it was, and he has several versions of the single question, and some of them were measuring directly on the level of hunger, but some of them were not. They were there were different projects that played with the answer options so that it would not be measuring just the bare low food insecurity.
Yeah. You're right. He and I discussed this also. There would be many different, there would be many possible ways of approaching the screener. I think the attractiveness of the first two items on the scale is that they're the first two items on the scale. They're very simple. And if the patient affirms one or both of those, you can go on with the other questions if you want to categorize them, or if you just want to refer them to services, you don't have to. But what, I don't know that we that there's ever been a comparison of the Murphy-Kleinman's that item with these first two items.
I don't think so.
Yeah. And I came right after the study ended. Like, I joined MDH in 2009, so from 2003 to 2009. And I don't know if the results were published.
I think they're both valid screeners to tell you slightly, give you slightly different indications of food insecurity.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.